Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Impact Show on Yachting International Radio, where we meet people who bring a positive impact to the yachting industry. And today we are meeting with director of Bargain Murray, a law firm based in London. Dom, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nigel. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. How's everything in London?
Good. It's actually sunny right now, which is always a nice thing. I sort of look out my window and think, where would I rather be? But actually, today, it's a pretty good spot to be in. So,
fantastic. Well, Dom, just to kick us off, why don't you just provide us with a little bit of background on yourself, your career, and how you came to work in the yachting industry?
Yeah, no, great. So, I've sailed all my life, and when I was at uni looking at what I want to do with my life, I was looking at different jobs, thinking, you know, do I want to go and work at sea or get a boring job in an office? And at that time, you know, it became pretty clear to me pretty quickly I didn't really want to be working away from home for long periods of time. So I thought, okay, let's sort of focus on maybe an old-fashioned career that, you know, my mum and dad would be proud of, and ended up settling on law school. I've got lots of sort of influences. My mum's a lawyer, and just various, you know, parents, friends, and people I've met in my younger years. So was sort of interested in law, but always wanted to make sure that I could link it somehow with the sea if I could. And back then it was commercial shipping. I really didn't know that lawyers did yachts at that point in my life. So I fairly focused. I joined professional groups focused on commercial shipping. Started my career at Hill Dickinson, who many people who watch this will probably have come across either in the yachting space, but also they're a full service firm. So I was doing working on the shipping departments there. Moved on to Clyde & Co. Again, focused entirely on maritime law. This is still as a paralegal before I'd managed to get my training contract. While I was at Clyde & Co, I got my training contract, so I did my 2 years of training, which again I focused entirely on maritime departments. So starting in maritime cargo, commodities. I went and worked in-house for a commodity client for 6 months, and my final seat I ended up in the yacht department, which, you know, by then I sort of had heard a bit about what it was doing. We thought, that's kind of cool. There's these guys, they're lawyers, but they also work with yachts. That sounds like something I might quite like to do. So I spent my last 6 months there, qualified into that department with a chap called John Leonida, who again, I'm sure many of your listeners will know, and spent the first sort of 6 months, year of my career as a qualified lawyer, working in that department and also working on still other practice areas, but that was my introduction to yacht law. And then from there on, you know, I wanted to develop my practice more, really focusing on yachting, work for a boutique firm that, you know, in my experience would focus just on yachting. So I moved to Bargain Murray in 2019 as an associate. And we're 3 years in, 4 years in February, I'll have been there. And it's been brilliant. It's, you know, I've gone from, you know, someone who desperately wanted to work on yachting matters and, you know, would do as much as I could, but sometimes, you know, you get asked to look up, you know, deal with a commodity matter or deal with a commercial ship finance matter. And the move to Bargain Murray has allowed me to entirely focus all of my time on yachting, whether it's, you know, sale and purchase, new builds. We do an awful lot of sort of operational ownership advice as well. And that's now my life, so it's great. You know, sometimes it's more exciting than other times. You know, we're on the come down from a week in Monaco a couple of weeks ago, but it's back to the grind, which is the important thing for us.
Great stuff. Well, congratulations on your career. You've really made some positive steps and progressing really, really fantastic. And just tell us a little bit about Bargain Murray, and let's get a feel for the company. Maybe a little touch on your mission and vision, a little bit of background on the company.
Yeah, so Bargate Murray is a boutique luxury asset law firm. It was established by Quentin Bargate, who's our CEO, back in 2004. He'd spent his earlier career predominantly as a shipping litigator at a big international firm called Simmons & Simmons, and in 2004 decided to set up his own firm and sort of grew with, I suppose, the super yacht industry as it's grown in the 2000s to where it is today. So, people have come and gone over the years. I think some different practice areas have come and gone. But in recent times, we've really focused in on luxury assets. That's what, you know, the firm's built on super yachts. And so what we do and what we want to do will one way or another relate to that. So we've for a long time had an aviation practice. There's obviously the natural sort of marriage between yachts and aviation, which you'll see in a lot of firms will be doing something similar. But we're always looking as well at other areas. I mean, what are the other practice areas that we could be, you know, useful in more than anything? You know, we're here to be useful to our clients. You know, if you want to know what our mission is, it's very simple: to provide really good legal advice for top-class clients that need, you know, that advice to ensure that their yacht operations and their yachting dreams go as they want them to. So if we can be of service to those clients in other areas, if it's to do with, you know, their maybe their luxury vehicles, their luxury properties, their artwork, you know, all these areas are areas that we haven't entered into fully to date, but they're certainly, in terms of our vision, it's being a full service within the luxury asset space, you know, covering all of our clients' needs and also having that experience where they cross over with one another. And again, the classic example might be with a helicopter and you know, your helipad on your yacht. Two completely separate worlds that meet in that moment, and then there's issues that can sometimes arise there or problems that need solved.
Sure. Do you see that as a differentiator between other companies? How do you differentiate?
I think it's not unique, but certainly where other firms perhaps have yachting as part of an international firm or part of a larger commercial firm, you know, we don't want to try and do that. You know, I think so it doesn't necessarily differentiate us from everyone in the market, but certainly it's a differentiator for us, is that focus on the luxury assets that our clients own and not trying to necessarily do more than that.
Okay, understood. We're seeing a shift in banking and insurance that collectively, I mean, you have the Net Zero Banking Alliance, we have the Poseidon Principles in insurance, setting carbon standards, carbon goals within their lending portfolio or their insurance portfolio. I mean, is that something that's happening in the law community as well?
I would say not so much, not to that extent of organisation, of sort of industry level commitment. It's something that certainly, I don't think you'll find a firm across the country, certainly not one of the larger firms, that doesn't have initiatives, doesn't have officers that are trying to drive these initiatives and programs forward. But I don't think that there's necessarily that industry-wide policy or program. But yeah, I mean, certainly the change I've certainly recognised in my whatever it is, 8 years since I sort of started working in a law firm, is everything was secondary to getting the job done. When I started out, if you had to print reams of paper, you did. My first job was pretty much printing partners' emails, putting them in folders and putting them in their cupboards. And if I got that done in time, then I could maybe do some research or work on a matter. And I would go through boxes and boxes of paper because the partners wanted paper files that they could read at their leisure.
Yeah.
Now, there will be people who still need that, you know, and I hope, you know, not to be judgmental, I hope that breed is sort of dying out to an extent. But the difference is now, you know, we're not printing stuff. You know, we as a firm, lots of firms, are paper light, if not paperless. We've invested in our systems rather than, you know, printers, for example. So we've got systems that don't need us to print. We don't, when we do our audits, you know, historically for your SRA audit, a lot of firms would provide a paper file to be reviewed, whereas we're now, you know, our systems allow us to use a soft copy file. So those times where maybe every year you were printing reams of paper to show that you had proper systems, we're not doing that anymore. And I think then also just the sort of smaller decisions. So when we go to marketing events, whether it's Monaco Yacht Show, whether it's, you know, something we've organised ourselves, whether it's a conference in London. We might have historically produced glossy brochures, goodie bags, you know, stuff that people take away and almost certainly, in hindsight, just throw it away when they get home, or it sits, you know, on my chair in the corner of my office here for a couple of months until I, or more realistically, my fiancée throws it away because she hates mess. So, you know, it's stuff like that that we've in recent times, instead of going, well, we've always given out goodie bags, we've always had glossy brochures, we're now going, well, actually, do we need to produce those glossy brochures? We don't. They're probably going to get thrown away, or they're so out of date by the time they get used that we have to throw them away ourselves and print new ones. Are we going to give away goodie bags? Well, do we need to? Are they even being taken? Are they just a waste of stuff? Would we rather invest that money, you know, in a charitable donation that year rather than giving it away in stuff that people don't necessarily want? Small decision. This year, our event at Monaco, we used sustainable bamboo wristbands rather than the plastic ones that we used a few years earlier. So whilst there's not necessarily a driven target across the industry, I think more and more firms are making decisions like we are, which is to say, well, that thing we used to do we have to still do it? Do we still need to be printing? Should we, if we've got a choice of that wristband versus that wristband, which one should we choose? And it's those small decisions that are a lot more prevalent now.
It's applying a conscious mindset to sort of every decision we make, right? I mean, if we do that, just those small thought processes can have a lot of impact, actually. So it's really interesting and great to hear that you're making those moves and implementing those standards. I mean, we look at Monaco Yacht Show and... I was at a smart sustainable marina event. It's just so conflicting that at the smart sustainable marina, all the talk about ESG and energy waste water, and but then in the venue we've got, you know, bottles of water and, you know, the capsules for the coffee, and it's just really small stuff. But from a consumer perspective, like, people see that stuff these days. Mm. It's like you say, it is easy, and it doesn't have to be a big investment. You know, it's simple stuff. But...
And you mentioned, you know, water bottles. You know, one thing that one of my colleagues did as we came out of the pandemic, which was as much about us not, you know, having our own water bottles, but, you know, we used to have a water machine with plastic cups. That's long gone. We now have our own chili bottles that she arranged. So, you know, we're not. Again, that's something that maybe historically it wouldn't have been either thought of as being important or of benefit, but it just shows that it's in our subconscious. And that was one of my younger colleagues, and that's how it's happening. Younger people, and, you know, I'm saying that as I don't consider myself that old yet, but younger people coming through the profession, whatever the profession is, and going, well, actually, you know, we've been brought up on a whole different set of rules to maybe the rules I was brought up on and the rules that people older than I am were brought up on, and it's about sort of listening to those different voices, and it's something that I think we've actually got better and better at Fargate Murray is, you know, listening to people's ideas, and you know, not everything gets taken on, or not everything would be budgeted for or whatever, but if there's a good idea, or again, if it's a choice in A and B, you know, we brought in a staff car lease scheme that's really geared towards EVs, and, you know, it's how I got my EV, and we're set up to charge at home. And, you know, talking about Monaco again, last year I drove down in the electric car, and yeah, I like a road trip and it was good fun, but I was, you know, you are slightly conscious, well, what's my carbon impact by driving that car? All right, debatable the total impact of electric vehicles, but we'll set that argument aside, versus that 2-hour flight down to Nice, you know, that it's things like that. Now, this year I did fly, and that's the trouble, is time is money in work, and you have to balance that. And, you know, I would have liked to have driven, but this year time didn't allow it. So there is still that friction, and you know, arguably you'd say, well, if you're that committed to these things, don't fly at all. And there is a challenge there. So, you know, you kind of do feel conflicted and think, should we fly? Should we be going to these things full stop? You know, because ultimately all those thousands of people that fly to Monaco for 1 week, it's not a sustainable activity by any stretch.
100%, and there was some comment around that and the longevity of boat shows, yachting events. How long will they last for? Considering it would be interesting to track attendees, where they came from, what mode of transport, and then of course we have the yachts themselves. We know that they've steamed there from somewhere. Where that would be, we don't know. What planning was involved? Was there any kind of extra mileage as a consequence of having to go to the show? And look, you know, just gathering some data around that activity, that one sole event, could have been really interesting.
But
super interesting that you're identifying with the shift in mindset from staff, from people that we want to recruit, with people who got on board already, and people that we want to recruit, and how can we attract and retain those, this new generation, that they have a very different mindset. Well, I'm sort of a little bit close to 50, but they have a very different mindset to us, and they're a lot more conscious. And I think that's something really interesting to bear in mind in the yachting industry, is kind of what message are we sending out, how are we operating, and how can we provide an industry where we can attract this new generation. So really interesting. And let's just shift to more sort of your area around the practice and your clients and the trends. What's trending now? And let's talk about the demographic initially. Much change in the demographic of yacht ownership, yacht charter?
I think the answer is yes and no. I think that the traditional owner is still there, and the traditional sort of demographic of that owner is not going to go away, generally speaking. Yes, we are seeing a bit of a shift in our clientele from our sort of mainstay clients of the last 20 years. We're now seeing generally as a bit of a trend, younger money, certainly an element of crypto in a lot of what we're seeing coming in nowadays, whether or not it's a pure crypto purchase or crypto transaction, but certainly that's sort of a factor in how certain clients have made significant sums of money. So that's an area, sort of younger clients, newer forms of money, particularly in the crypto space. But that isn't to say that we aren't still seeing our, absolute classic clients still, looking at using us and having their own needs. And it's, I suppose we as a firm have traditionally worked on, maybe our skew is towards the larger end of the fleet, which naturally directs you to a very high category of wealth, which doesn't change quite so quickly or quite so much with more modern trends in wealth. But then when we're working down the smaller end of the spectrum, so maybe you're more your 30 to 60 meter yachts, that's where we're seeing probably a bit more change in our demographic of clientele. And in terms of geographically, we are probably seeing a bit of a shift at the moment in our newer clients. There's a bit more Middle Eastern money and probably a bit more US money than we perhaps as an English firm would have seen historically. So in terms of geographically, they're kind of growth areas for us as well.
Super, thank you. And regarding build process, much change in the way, in the requests from the clients, or is it business as usual?
I think, to be completely fair, in our experience, it's more or less business as usual. I think we're certainly not seeing clients asking for something radically different in their bills. What I would say, we've seen a bit of a shift, and this is perhaps more COVID-driven, is, the amount of disruption people saw in 2020, 2021 with, charter plans, trips cancelled, all sorts of things because of whether it was because they could or couldn't fly in or out the country or because they had to quarantine. We've certainly seen clients who have sort of, in the past, their helipad has been a nice to have, it's been secondary, it's kind of touch and go and they'll never really use it, to looking at, okay, I want a fully commercially coded helipad so that I do not need to touch normal soil between when I leave my home in wherever to get to the airport. I get straight in my helicopter, straight to the yacht, and I don't want to have to go through anywhere that there's any risk of quarantine, any risk of picking up, you know, COVID and then testing positive. Because we saw so much disruption, you know, yachts under quarantine, you know, with whole crew under quarantine, all sorts. So that's sort of something that I think there was definitely that trend that developed then, which was I really want my yacht to be my island. And that's something that I think we definitely saw an emphasis on and will probably be reflected in builds. Other things, generally speaking, but these aren't things that other people, you know, this isn't particularly insightful, but, you know, bigger sort of larger platform glazing, I think more open, light spaces. I think when you generally see the style of yacht being designed now, it's much more open, much more kind of in tune with the environment that's around it, and perhaps less about private spaces or small spaces, you know, bigger open spaces. We've seen some fantastic concepts with, you know, double height atria and stuff like that, which I think is really exciting to see these really yachts that truly, you know, it's taking things to another level again. You know, we yachts have got bigger and bigger, and the first time you step on a 100-meter yacht, you're blown away anyway. But then to walk into a yacht and then suddenly see a double height glazed space, you know, it's just, I think it's really exciting from a design perspective, I think. And but whilst there are obviously the yards are all introducing, you know, more environmental sort of systems, I don't know that among our clients that's driven by the client. I not in our experience.
Okay, interesting. So more heliops is something to consider.
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the infrastructure's there, but I suppose if there is going to be an increase, then we'll have to see how that develops. Well, it's great to get at some insights on how things are progressing, and just to rewind a little bit, because we have touched on a few of these initiatives within Bargate Murray that to improve your environmental impact. I mean, just to rewind a little bit, so you actually studied in conservation, biology and ecology, is that right?
Yeah, so I went to uni in Exeter and studied conservation, biology and ecology. And obviously at that time, you know, learned or saw, maybe was exposed a lot more to, you know, the impact. First of all, just how the environment works, how ecology works, but also seeing some of that impact, you know, on field trips, what have you. It's an area that, you know, to be completely honest, when I was at uni, I didn't see a career in that area for me, but it's something that I've always, again, it's that thread that sort of followed through. It's in my mindset, it's in my career, you know, doing what I do, how can I, you know, I suppose, you know, pay homage a bit to my undergrad studies, but implement, you know, some of those, that awareness of the world, of the environment, into what I do, how I do it.
Well, I think it's superb. It's great that you've got that in your soul, and that you've taken that on through into your life, and then through into Bargate Murray, and kind of leading the way in some aspect towards the change. So I think
certainly, you know, sailing, yachting, it so goes so hand in hand with conservation and ecology. And, you know, before I ever went to university, I'd sailed all my life, and you know, we all want, why wouldn't we want clean oceans? Why wouldn't we want, you know, the environment around us to be preserved as best we can? You know, there's no getting around, even if you're sailing, there's every chance that you're leaking some fuel, some oil, a bit of gear is going to break off and end up in the sea. You know, that is a negative that, you know, we should try and minimize. But equally, if those people using the water, you know, are using their passion for that activity and keeping that activity as pure as possible, you know, we're the perfect people, you know, in the yachting industry to be doing this. And yes, there's an impact, you know. You'll know better than I do the impact of a 140-meter super yacht in its annual operations. But by having all those people involved in that yacht, passionate about protecting the environment around it,
yeah,
I think that there's got to be a benefit there.
No, I think that's a great perspective to take. and definitely somewhere that I'm interested in as well. So, Dom, it's been fantastic to have you on the show, to have a chat with you. It's been a while, so it's great to catch up. Thank you so much. And we'll see you, hopefully, at one of the events very soon.
Thanks very much for having me, Nigel.
Everybody, you've been listening to the Impact Show on Yachting International Radio with Dominic Bolfin from Bargate Murray, a law firm in London. Dom, how can people get in touch with you?
Oh, God. Well, Dominic at bargatemurray.com is the easiest way, but Google me.
It's as easy as that. Thanks very much indeed. And my name's Nigel Marison. I'm the founder and director of Blue ESG. You've been listening to The Impact Show again on Yachting International Radio. Thanks very much indeed, and we'll see you next time.